and it is Friday morning here, Getaway Friday, August the 13th, 2021, 16 minutes past the hour. You are tuned into the Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship here on WWGH Radio, heard live every Friday morning at 11:10 a.m., repeated on Sunday morning at 8:10 a.m., and Wednesday afternoon at 3:10 p.m. You can also go to the website, WWGH1071.com, program archives, and the Pastor Spot is the first one under there. You can go back and listen to shows from March of 2018 through the present. Also, the Community Christian Fellowship Sunday sermon is on every Sunday here at 12:15 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. And now we turn to the host of our show, Pastor Steve Whitaker.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Doing well.
Good week. Boy, it got kind of hot, didn't it?
It did.
Yesterday, I was out working, unloading some lumber at home, and it was like 10:30 in the morning, and by 11 o'clock, I was literally wringing wet from head to foot. It really was a scorcher, but I had a lot of stuff going on, a lot of neat stuff going on. Last night, we had a teen night at the pool. And it was an open church also. We had 39 kids last night at the swimming pool, but after about an hour of swimming, the storm came in, and everyone had to go home. But we got, I think we got 20 pizzas, and those were all eaten, so everyone got to eat.
I saw a picture of that last night. That was great.
Yeah, and the kids have a great time doing that stuff. And, you know, last Sunday, they went to Mohican Tubing, and we had 24 kids go to Mohican, I think 7 adults, and spent the whole day there. Just really enjoyed themselves and had a good time. And, you know, that's one of the great things about having the church is that, you know, you can have those things for young people to do. This Sunday after church, we're having we're going to have a lunch and have chicken on the grill, and it's going to be a time of praying and a prayer time for the school year starting and everything that involves that and everything around that. And I think that's pretty important too. But I want to remind everybody we're still serving coffee on Wednesday mornings at 6:30 in the morning, from 6:30 to 9:30 in front of the church. Get iced coffee or hot coffee or flavored coffee, and I'll tell you what, we have some ladies. Eva Myers, she is making these, there's several that are making these breakfast muffins that are would arguably stand up to anything you buy at one of the places that are supposed to be great at doing that. But they're all free, and it's just a great time to do that. I'm good to have everyone here this morning. Again, I am Pastor Steve Whitaker. I am the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Certainly encourage people to get involved in church and to come and enjoy a church family. Church family is so important. It's important in our lives. It's important that we have people to go to when things are difficult. You know, one thing that Scott that I always found interesting was you won't see people in church for a few weeks, or people won't be in church at all, and you talk to them and say, hey, where you been, or how things are, or we'd love to see you, and they'll say, you know, I'm just going through a really tough time right now, and you think to yourself, well, wait a minute, that's when you should be in church, not hiding from church, because that's the time when you need the encouragement, that's the time when you need people around you that can help you and stand with you. A lot of times I know that there's been times that people have had struggles in their marriage with different issues and trying to deal with them. Well, you know, when you have a church full of people, and you have a lot of people that have been married and are married and have gone through those same struggles, and many times they can relate and share with you and help you walk through some of that stuff. But people forget that, I think, a lot of times. And they think the church, unfortunately, people think many times the church is just there to judge people. And that's not what they're there to do. First of all, a true church doesn't judge anyone because God is the judge. They relay what God's word says, but it's not them personally judging anyone. And as the scripture says, by the same judgment that we would judge other people, that judgment also comes back to us. So in other words, if I were to relay something in scripture that the Bible says about an issue, I have to remember that applies to me too. And it applies to me even as a pastor in a greater sense because I'm held accountable for what I teach. So, you know, I think that's pretty important. But I think it's a time when everyone could really stand to be in church, to be getting plugged in. This is a new school year starting, and you know, we seem to be a people that we always have defining times in our year. Times we'll make decisions. A big one a lot of times is New Year's resolutions. Most of those never kept, but New Year's resolutions, or maybe a birthday. You know, this year I did this, that by this time next year I'm going to weigh 30 less pounds, or whatever those dates are. Well, I always look at starting back to school as a different time, because we define our kids many times, at least academically and socially and where they're at, by their school year. How'd the school year go? So we're going back to school. This is a school year. And there's so many things that we can do that are positive and start a new thing. You know, Cheryl Lee has been on here several times with Linda. And Child Evangelism Fellowship is active in all of our schools now. And it's an after-school program. Most of them are on Tuesdays. You can get the schedule. Where the kids stay after school for an hour and have a wonderful time, a nice lesson, and you know, the different things they do during that time, and the kids just love it. But the parents have to make a decision that that's going to happen for their kids to do that. So I would encourage them to look into that. Also, get your kids involved in a church that has a good youth group and is teaching what they should be teaching them. There's a youth group for entertainment. There's a youth group for a lot of reasons. A lot of churches just want to keep youth in their church. But I think the key and the important thing of a youth group is to help young people to grow, to mature into solid adults that understand what the Word of God says, and to understand it, and to know it, and to trust it. And I think that's a very important thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that I just saw her yesterday, a matter of fact, in the grocery store. And she's a very pleasant lady. And what she was able to accomplish there, which I know Linda Sims, who's on the station, is very involved in that group. It's great.
Yeah, I was at, we had a kind of a year kickoff event a few weeks ago. And I saw a lot of the people involved. And there's so many churches that are involved in it now. And churches actually supporting Child Evangelism Fellowship, and also they're having people in their congregation that would like to go through the training and do it, and you know, teach that after school, that you know they're able to do that. I think it's just a really good, it's a good program, it's a good thing. Of course, we'll be kicking off Team Kid here very shortly, and you know, that's at our church, and things we do with the young people in the evening. And like I said, the neat thing about that is that when we do that, it gives parents an hour and a half break or whatever to do something while their kids are there and know that they're in a safe place around several adults and plenty of young people, and they can have that good time. It's just so important. You know, there's enough bad out in the world, and I think that with the bad out in the world, we should take every advantage of what's good that there is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't do that, and then they wonder, you know, why do my kids just want to do the bad things? Well, if that's all they get exposed to, you know, what else are they going to do? Times have changed so much. They really have. I look at the things we did growing up and just the common everyday things. I think electronics have had a huge effect on what kids do and don't do, because it's such an easy go-to.
Well, you know, I think there have always been separations in generations, but I really think from the start of time until about 2003, there's a complete difference.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've always had what they call a generation gap.
Yeah.
But I think this last generation, there's a chasm there that is just almost unbreachable, or the divide's just too wide, and to get them to understand where we're at and where we're thinking is just completely different.
But you know, don't you remember when it used to be issues that we felt differently about? That's not really what this generation is about. This generation just is about playing outside, going to work, and then I'm not blanketing them all, but there are some exceptions, but you know, not having your phone next to you every minute of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different world.
Oh, I've talked to parents, and they've tried in acts of discipline, they're going to take their kid's phone away, and it's like dealing with a mad animal. They just go nuts. you know, screaming and crying and throwing things, and you can't take my phone, you know, because unfortunately they've made it their lifeline. You know, if I'm not there for someone to respond to someone's text or them respond to me, I lose everything. It's really funny, my, interesting, I should say, my grandsons, in one of my kids' families, have not been allowed to have a phone until they were 15 or 16. And, you know, by the time you get to junior high, you know, they like to have boyfriends and girlfriends, you know how that goes. And I remember my one grandson, you know, telling me that, you know, none of the girls like him because they can't talk to him on their phone. He can't be reached. And that's, you know, they just can't understand that. What do you mean you don't have a phone? You know, I should be able to talk to you every second. You know, he's kind of at the point where he's been used to doing his own thing with no one bothering him. And honestly, it's really funny to watch these boys because they've gotten to the point they've really been very good at what they do and got involved in so many good personal things, but their time wasn't taken up by a phone and by these situations to where they're very active and do a lot of things and stay busy and do productive things and it's kind of bumped that socialization off a couple years because they just weren't glued to a telephone.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me because everybody is so connected and everybody's so glued. It reminds me of a saying that didn't used to be used about telephones, but I think it certainly applies, is how can I miss you if you don't go away?
That's interesting, isn't it?
Why, you know, that used to be used as if you're in my life every day stopping over, or you're in my living room, or you're on television every day, how am I supposed to miss you? But now, if I'm connected to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, why would I miss you? You don't go away.
Well, I guess there's nothing wrong with not missing someone if you enjoy them being there.
I guess, but boy, that's a lot of time.
You know, it's funny though. One thing I really do like about having the this social media type thing is family. And being able to stay connected to family and people that I haven't seen in years. You know, I lost contact with so many people after high school, and just complete contact. And then to all of a sudden see what they're doing and their families and be able to reconnect in that way. Some of them I feel like we're friends again and know a lot about each other's families, but we've never personally seen each other. And I think that's kind of a cool thing, too.
But it's also opened up the door, maybe even more so, for criticism, bullying. It's made it so much easier and so much wider for a bigger group. You know, it's so easy to attack now. You don't even have to be in somebody's face.
Oh, I know.
It's unbelievable to me that is what people have decided to use social media for, which certainly was not the purpose.
You're exactly right. Something I want to talk about this morning, we started down another road, but one thing I want to talk about a little bit is collateral damage. And it's interesting, the things that we adopt in our culture, in our country, whether people would agree with me or not, I think it's true that we are definitely moving more towards more and more governmental control. And in our society, in our lives, and everything about it. And it's interesting because the government today, one thing we've learned in the last 20 years is that the government can do whatever it wants, whenever it wants, and they just find a way to do it, and they get it done. And it doesn't matter if it's something that is constitutional. It doesn't matter if it's something that has always gone another direction, you know, and it just doesn't, this is really silly. The end of the video. It's something that, it's just the way it is. They're able to do those things. I guess we have to kind of understand that because a lot of things they mandate and, for instance, one thing that when I talk about this collateral damage, you know, remember when we did the cash for cars? I think that was in the very beginning of Barack Obama's administration. Now, that sounded like a great idea to boost the auto industry. I think that it This is I've got Sean. I'm going to have to change my router when I get in here, or at least where I'm picking up from, because it loses it. But anyway, the auto industry. Yeah, it may have boosted the auto industry, but the things we don't look at that it did was, first of all, it just really destroyed the auto parts, the used auto parts industry, really set them back a decade. And the other thing that it did that we didn't take into consideration is that how many people can never afford a new car, therefore they buy used cars. And in buying used cars, you know, we needed that huge used car market. And it took that. It took the good used cars off the road, and they crushed them, and they couldn't be put in a junkyard. So none of them were usable, and it drove used car prices sky high. So while it may have helped people that could go out and afford to buy a new car, what it did to the people, which is the majority of our country that can't afford a brand new car, it actually hurt them. So those are the kind of decisions government makes sometimes that they don't think of. Oh yeah, how's this going to affect people down the road? I think our stimulus, you know, the stimulus when it started was a great idea. You know, I mean, it appeared to be a great idea, and maybe in some cases it was, but because it was so blanketed, and because there were no stipulations on it whatsoever, it also coincided with people not needing to pay their rents. You know, moratorium on paying your rent. Okay, so how about having one or the other? Either you have a moratorium on the rent or you have the stimulus, because the stimulus was supposed to be there to help the people that couldn't pay their rent, right? So why didn't people pay the rent with that money? I'm sure many did, but so many didn't. And, you know, we never think sometimes something sounds like a great idea. And when we kicked the stimulus in, it was so wide, it was the whole country. And the amount of money that went out was unbelievable. And the amount of deficit spending that went out was unbelievable.
You know, that moratorium on rent, that's very interesting, because it's a complicated matter. Because, to be honest, the thing about it is, and I think a lot of people are finding this out now, they should have known it at the time. Yes, people could not kick you out. That is absolutely true. That was the moratorium. They cannot evict you. It was an eviction moratorium. But you were still responsible, and still are, for all that rent. I mean, you, every month, you're responsible. Now, there was money given to agencies in counties and cities and so on and so forth if you needed help with your rent, but you could have gone to them and they would have paid your rent. If you were below a certain income level, or you'd been laid off, or whatever it may be, it was part of all those packages. You would see it was a rent help. I forget what exactly it was called, but our Job and Family here in Marion had it.
Right.
You could go to them and they'd pay your landlord, and that was that. But if you just simply didn't pay your rent, well, yeah, they couldn't evict you during the moratorium, but you're still responsible for every month that you didn't pay. And as soon as that moratorium's up, you either owe that or you're going to get evicted.
Right, and why they didn't realize that is beyond me. Yeah. And the end of the day is coming. You know, I don't like to live with waiting on the other shoe to drop. Do you?
No.
I'm one of those nip it in the bud kind of guys. Maybe I wasn't when I was younger. But if there's anything floating out there that I think I'm going to have to worry about, I like to go straight to the issue and get it done with. For the simple reason, we talked about that before the show started, something like that, something along those lines. And I like to deal with them, because I don't... It's hard enough keeping my mind where it needs to be all day long and focus on the things that need to be done on a daily basis without having something hanging over behind me that's in the back of my mind that I got to deal with.
Well, that's why, to me, and that, did anybody, I mean, a lot of things lately have just fascinated me. Did anybody call their landlord? I mean, okay, they can't evict you. Okay. But did anybody call and say, I can't pay because, and maybe the landlord would have said, fine. You know, and then you got no worries. You're fine. There's nothing hanging over your head. If you turn that into a combative relationship where the landlord says, well, I want my money, and you said, well, you can't evict me. Okay, well, that will go on about a year and a half, and then we're going to get into some bigger trouble. You got something hanging over your head the entire time. And it's much like, and this is the only time I'm going to bring this up, is the mask thing. No matter how you feel about it, call your doctor. Forget about the politicians. Forget about the internet. Forget about what everybody's telling you. Just if you had a cold that you couldn't shake, you would call your doctor for an antibiotic. Call your doctor. If he says don't wear it or do this, if it's anxiety, whatever, he's going to have some solution. Vaccine, same thing. Just call your doctor. Why are we not calling people directly anymore? Doctors, landlords. Why are we just saying, well, you know what, this is the way it is, and that shoe hangs.
You know what I think a lot of it leads to is anti-socialization. And once again, I'm going to go back to the church on this one. People, they find it easier to sit at home and watch a live stream of someone somewhere or sit at home and watch a live stream of service than to go communicate with people. And when you don't communicate with people all the time, communication becomes more difficult, meaningful communication. I remember a few years ago, I was sitting on a front porch, like three old men. We were sitting, me and two other guys that were much older than me, I will say. We're sitting on a porch swing in town, just talking. And a boy had been to the Dairy Queen, and he came walking down past where we were. Said, hey, how are you today, buddy? And he looked at us like, what do I say? Like, what are these old men speaking to me for? What are these guys talking to me? We have lost our ability, and a lot of it was because our socialization is electronic. We're not socializing back and forth. And we don't necessarily know how to have a meaningful, productive conversation where there may be some controversy involved, and we have such anxiety over that that we just hide from it. We may go, rather than talk to a landlord, we may run to a social agency and say, hey, you got to cover me on this because this is what might happen, rather than making that phone call. And I think that we've gotten to a point where we're not socially spending the time in discussion and debate that we used to. Debate has gotten so violent with people that I'll give you a good example. We showed a movie 2 weeks ago at the church. It's called In the Image of God. And it dealt with a lot of the issues in sexuality today and what God's intention was for how he created man. It was a very, very well done film, very well put together. But we invited a lot of teenagers to come. And there were a lot of teenagers come. But the ones that I knew would not agree with what was being said in this documentary didn't show up. Now, I would be inquisitive enough as a young person when I was that age. I would have showed up anyway, just say, like, you're that way, Scott. Well, let's see what this is about, what's being said. Give me some issues to debate with. But today we've gotten to a point, we want to have an opinion, and we don't want to argue with anybody, and this is what it's going to be, and please don't say anything to me that is going to be wrong because you're wrong and I'm right and we're not even going to have this discussion, and there's no open discussion. There can be a lot learned about people and how they think if you'll just talk to them.
Or listen. I learned so much, you know, I still say, and you know, this will be chiseled on my tombstone, I never learned anything when I was talking. Because if you just sit and listen to somebody, listen to what they're saying and how they're saying it, that'll tell you a lot about some people.
That must mean I leave the show a little dumber because I do all the talking.
Well, there is a time and place to speak, that's for sure.
And I think that you have to listen to what other people say. Yeah. You know, your opinion is as important as mine. And everyone else has, you know, everyone has a, I remember my deceased brother-in-law, Larry, we were at a funeral and that I was doing, and we were talking prior to the funeral, and I said, you know, this isn't going to be a real easy one to do for various reasons. And he looked at me, he said, you know what, Steve, he said, everybody's got a story, no matter where they are, no matter what they've been through in their life, no matter where they ended up, there's a story that took them to that place. And is that not true?
Oh, everybody.
There's a backstory to everyone. And I think that a lot of times, if we take the time to understand and look at someone's backstory, you'll see more of what was going on with them. I went through a period of time as a young person, I was a pretty wild rascal, and probably not the most dependable wild rascal in the world. But there was a backstory to that. I'm not using it as an excuse, don't get me wrong. Nothing is an excuse for bad behavior. Nothing is. We are all are personally accountable for what we do. Now, there may be a backstory that tends to lean us towards that, and it's our reaction to it. You can take an exact situation and put two different people in that situation, and one may come out very successful that seems fine and goes on with life, and another person, it'll crush them like a bug. And it's because how we react to the situation being differently. But we have to understand that people do have that. It's amazing when you talk to people to hear where they came from and their backgrounds.
This is why when people ask me what my favorite type of books are, I love biographies and autobiographies. Because so many times I'll hear somebody look at somebody and say, wow, you've had a great, great life. Isn't that great? And at that moment, it might be. That might be the best time of their life. But when you learn what they went through to get there, you never hear or see that. And there is stuff.
I had a very dear friend that is, well, he was actually my friend's father and mom. And Nancy is still a dear friend, and I keep in touch with their kids, Donna and Tim. But their parents, Bill and Nancy Begley, they owned a very successful, profitable upholstery company, Begley Upholstery in Columbus. They were in Clintonville, and they did a lot of really nice high-end work, a very successful company. But both of those kids, Bill and Nancy, they came out of Harlan County, Kentucky. And the poorest of poor you could even imagine in the hills. And they grew up with nothing. And it's amazing because if you met them later in life, you notice they were very jovial, kind, loving people, but you never would have guessed that that's where they came from. But it depends on, and of course, God was a huge active part of their life, and I think that's a key to so many people coming out of depression and many difficult times. I don't know how people do it without God, to be honest with you. If you look at people's backstories, they're all so... You just wouldn't guess sometimes where people come from.
No, and it seems to me, and it's not a blanket statement, but it seems to me all really successful people had some kind of trauma somewhere. Now, I'm not talking about criminal trauma, and I'm not talking that criminal things were necessarily done to them. Sometimes they were. But there's always some kind of hardship. There's something in their life that made it more difficult. There was something.
Well, I think, Scott, that it's one of the reasons for that is that when we overcome something, it builds confidence. So the next thing that comes down the road, you think, I can overcome this. And, of course, I believe that God's hand has everything to do with what I overcome and can't overcome. And I trust him through it, to walk through it, and to help me through it. And when things come up, I know there's always light at the end of the tunnel because I've always got God on my side and walking with me. But I think that in our personal lives, and anything in anyone's life, I think that if they overcome something, the next time they're challenged, they have that boost of confidence that they already overcame. And the more that you overcome, the more challenged, then those people may be faced with something positive. Maybe they're a young adult that is looking at a four-year college and they've never had any support. They don't know how where the money's coming from, what they're going to do, and they want to do this with their life. Well, if they've overcome stuff earlier that was beyond belief, they say to themselves, that's okay, I didn't want that, and I can do this, and then they do it. And that's where that success starts to build, because they're not afraid of taking that next step out. The biggest drawback to success is fear. It's not laziness. Many people would tell you, is laziness to stop success? I don't believe that. It's fear. It's fear of failure. And it's fear of, I can't do this. And unfortunately, when we're afraid of doing something and we don't do it, we've become complacent. We take the lesser of things because they seem like they're obtainable. Does that make sense?
I mean, so
more obtainable, and before you know it, it can lead into laziness, because it can lead into lack of drive, lack of ambition, and you don't have confidence to do anything. Before you know it, it's just well, I'm just going to live day to day and see what happens. And it all started with that four-letter word, fear.
I think there is a lot of fear, but I also think it's not so much laziness that I see, but what it is, it's there's a lot of envy, jealousy,
Why?
Because, see, here's what I think. This is my whole theory on envy and jealous, is that, well, like for me, I am jealous of anybody who can play an instrument, because I can't.
I love to myself.
Yeah. But it's a positive jealousy, because I'm just, wow, listen to them.
I love music, and I
can't
play a little lick.
Yes. And, you know, so that's my jealousy. I can't do that right now. Maybe one day I'll learn, but not today. But
it's not life-changing jealousy.
No, but it's not destructive. But there are some people that have destructive jealousy and envy, and I think that comes from, why can't I do that? What are they doing? They must be working the system. You know, every rich person's working the system. Well, that's not true.
I'll be honest, I grew up with some people very close to me that think that way.
Yeah.
And that's just not true.
No.
It's not true at all. And I think that it's really interesting. I was brought up, we did not have much. there were five of us kids. And my dad had a blue-collar job, got laid off a lot, got hurt a lot. We just did not have a lot. And that was back in the day where you couldn't go apply for it if you didn't have it. If you didn't have it, you didn't have it. And growing up that way, it's interesting. I never for a minute felt envy or jealousy of anyone that had something I didn't. Because I was raised to know that what people do, the direction they go, has a direct bearing on what they have. I understood that there were people that I knew that their parents made more money than mine, and that's why they had those things. But at the same time, it didn't make me feel like they were any better or I was any less. It's just they did something different that paid them more money. And I understood that growing up. I never had any jealousy of those that had versus those that didn't have. What it did make me do as a young person was want to aspire to have more, or if I want to have that, I know what direction I got to go to do that, you know. But we're missing that today somehow. We're in a society today that's real interesting. Everybody's supposed to have the same thing, no matter what they do, and that's really crazy when you think about it, because people invest more. I mean, of their time and of their education into getting to a point. People work harder maybe in another area. They make different decisions. There's reasons why some have and some don't. And you can always go from the don't to the have if you apply those principles to get there yourself. But the problem is when we tell people that it doesn't matter whether you're working hard to get it or not, you deserve that internet and that cell phone. You get that automatically because everyone should have that. You deserve to have A, B, or C because that's what they have and they're no better than you are. Whatever happened to the fact that we strive to get better and work to accomplish things? What if you worked so hard to build this radio station? You knew the work and what goes in behind it. And somebody, and the FCA comes in, or FCC comes in, and they said, "Hey, by the way, Scott, this guy right here is going to start a radio station, and we're going to let them take over your spot because on the airwaves, because you know what, they really come from a position where they really didn't get much of a chance, and you've had it long enough, so we're going to push you aside and they don't have any experience. I mean, this is the kind of crazy stuff that's going on." And we need to understand that, you know, first of all, God made us all individually, but he made us all equal. And we are equal. We're equal, but the effort that we all put out sometimes is not equal, nor the direction that we're giving, the mentoring that we're giving. Mentoring is so important. It is so, so important. If you know a young person out there that needs mentored, mentor them. If you see someone that their mom and dad isn't giving them the proper time and you have the ability to step in and help in some way, do it. You see a kid walking the street all the time because he has nothing to do. Build a friendship. Invite him to something positive. let them know that people, you know, offer them, you know, hey, what are you doing today? I'll give you, you want to make a few bucks? How about you trim my bushes today? I've got the tools. All those kind of things that can begin to build. I know a guy, Rick Tidd, is an example that I'll give. Rick Tidd is funeral director in Hilliard. He has Tidd Funeral Home in Hilliard. He also has Tidd Porter in Mount Sterling, and I think in London, I think. But Rick has been a very successful funeral director. You know how he started out? He started out mowing the lawn for Webster Junk at Junk Funeral Home in Hilliard as a kid. He mowed his grass, and he trimmed his bushes. And he eventually worked his way up through the whole process, and eventually, one day, he bought Webster Junk out. And, you know, that mentoring process is so important in so many areas, and we're not doing a lot of, there's a lot of fear in mentoring sometimes because of, man, we got to be careful anymore. I can't be alone with one particular young person at a time as a pastor. I've got to have another adult there, or I've got to have two or three of them together. It just isn't, unfortunately, because of the way things are going in society today, accusations can destroy you. And we have to set those protections in place so that doesn't happen. And like, for instance, I will never, ever, nor have I that I know of, ever drive a young lady home by herself. Won't do it, can't do it. It just is not something that is a wise idea. And so we have to be careful in those areas. But we shouldn't let us, we shouldn't let us make us afraid to find a way to reach out. Or if we can't reach out, you know, if I know a young lady that needs mentored, obviously I'm not going to do it. But I can reach out to a lady that I know may be a good mentor and put them together. And I think we need to do a lot more of that. And I think the church offers that a lot, if especially when you get into the smaller churches, churches our size, where there's more of a personal relationship. It's not so much of a production, that you're able to have more of that one-on-one where there's understanding and people get to know people. We've got some young men that come to the church, a few right now, that I think of one in particular, we're kind of a lifeline, and they need that. And kids go through difficult times, and it's nice when people can be out there and really reach out to them.
Well, it's interesting to me because I'm not sure ever teaching anybody by saying, do this, do that, do it this way. I don't know if that ever made, I'm sure it has worked, but when you pick it up by osmosis, when somebody is in the room and you want to spend a lot of time around them, and there's somebody you really like, and you just see how they handle things, mm-hmm. how they do them.
That's the best mentor.
Yeah, I think so.
The best mentor does less talking and more showing.
Yeah, yeah, because example is a great thing. You know, that's why I one of the worst sayings that ever came down the pike, do as I say, not as I do. It's impossible.
If it is impossible, it's just like here, like, you know, you host several shows, and if there was a young person that was interested in broadcasting, and there's two ways you could approach it. One was you could set up a classroom time and say, this is what you do, this is what you don't do, and you could have tests and do all these stuff, or you could say, I'll tell you what, why don't you come by the station and just sit and listen for several shows on different days over different times. And, of course, there is that direct teaching time, too. But, you know, they say, you know, this is something I want to do. I see how Scott handled that. You know, I can listen to you on a show, and I can tell when you're turning the direction of the conversation or when you're back, because it's needed to be. Or you're interjecting something that maybe someone hadn't thought about. And, you know, you can watch that interaction. And you know, that can be an abrupt change or it can be a flow.
Well, you know, the few times I was asked to come speak at the journalism class at Harding, it was great. But it was a classroom setting and it was always awkward for me because I really was just telling. I was telling them what I thought worked. Now, that's great, and it worked for me, but I don't know that it'll work for them. And the question I get asked the most is, how do you get those guests? How do you get those guests? Well, I don't know. I mean, to me, I assume that everybody can get those guests, and why don't they? So it's an interesting thing.
I can tell you, I think that you have years of cultivating relationships, and I think that that reputation precedes you, so it makes it easier to get a guest when that time comes.
Yeah, it did, and it does help, because people do Google you and people do YouTube you, and they can see by body of work what you have done, and that's nice to get to that point, because then people do feel comfortable. And you know what? That's but people, if that's what you want to do, do it. You know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I wouldn't even know how to tell somebody to do it, because you've got to.
I think in your business there has to be a level. There has to be a level of trust of the person doing the interview. And I think that, you know, I would be, it'd be interesting to see, and I can ask you this directly now. It'd be interesting to see how many people, guests of yours, that are acquaintances or friends of other guests you have had over the years, that have mentioned you or mentioned the show.
Oh, a lot. And the one that was very good to me was Phyllis Diller. Phyllis Diller gave me great praise, and I always appreciated her for that. And I know she would give me, I know she called these people and said, he's okay, he's okay. I remember years ago interviewing Elvis's doctor, Dr. Nicopoulos, who's long dead. But he was a very skittish guy, because over the years, he got asked a lot of nasty questions. And I had interviewed enough people around Elvis that told him, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. I asked him, I didn't softball him, I asked him every nasty question that everybody else had, but I think he felt that I was generously curious, and I wasn't trying to be nasty.
You weren't doing an I gotcha interview.
No, but did you think Elvis was going to die? Were you performing regular checkups on him? Could it have been stopped? Now, that's what they were all asking, and I asked it too, but I'm really curious. Do you? And I let him talk. I didn't cut him off.
No, that's huge and important.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we're getting out of time here.
Close, about 2 minutes.
I want to encourage people to come to Community Christian Fellowship. We are a Bible teaching and believing church. We are a church that's very relational, but not overbearing. We are a church where you come as you are, not as you think we want to see you. One of the biggest questions I always get asked is, what should I wear? Well, I don't really care what you wear, but make sure you wear something, please.
Something.
We are a fully clothed church. But no, you know, come as you are. You know, that's how you are. And, you know, we offer classes for kids during service. If you come at the 10:30 service, we break out for a kids session, so please bring your kids. And we have Sunday school at 9:30 and Bible study on Sunday night, several Bible studies on Wednesday. We're just a very active church, and we're people find that I've never been told by anyone that ever came to our church that boy, that church wasn't friendly, because we are, and it's not one of those places where you have to walk in and worry about, oh, everybody was looking at me, because we're all weird. I mean, I call us the Heinz 57 church, because we are just all from different backgrounds. We all, you know, have different income levels, but yet we're all fall together as the body of Christ. And I'd encourage you to come. We're at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our phone number there is 740-494-2222. And if you want to ask further questions or about church times or anything, please give us a call at that number. And it's been great talking to all of you today. It's been great talking to Scott. We've been a little bit around to some different things today, but it's always great being able to talk to Marion and talk to everyone out there. And I look forward to you guys hearing the service at 12:15 this Sunday. And of course, this show will play again on Wednesday between, is it 3:15 and 4?
3:15 and 4 every Wednesday.
And Sunday morning at
8.
8 o'clock Sunday morning. God bless you guys and have a good day.
WGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For legendary comedian and the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll. And as I teach